you're tuned in to Steve Megatron on Altered Geek.
Hello and welcome to Altered Geek. I'm your host, Steve Megatron Phillips, and in this episode of the podcast, I'll be flying solo. I'll be covering some long-awaited listener feedback. We'll also be having an episode with Birdman Dodd this coming week, and possibly TFG and Mike, to cover a couple of hot topic issues as far as things with our dispositions as geeks and fandoms and polarization with those fandoms. I think it'll be a pretty interesting topic. So, without further ado, going to jump into the first bit of feedback. So, first bit of feedback, and this is in no particular order because I have some of it bookmarked on my phone, some of it bookmarked on my browser. This first batch is from Facebook, and from the April 10th episode, A Trip to the Past, Finding Fun with Gaming and Nostalgia. Brad says, the funny thing about returning to older gaming is that you have an ASAT and discovering you lost that awesomeness and your son does it better. Yeah, the funny thing is a lot of my old gamer experiences are on DOS-based systems or old Windows. And you can't really play them anymore unless you're on DOSBox or some type of emulator like that. And they're not really something I'm trying to get my son into. My son has a lot of... he's almost like borderline autistic in a sense, like, and it's not like diagnosed, but like he's very OCD on things, and it kind of reminds me of me. And he attaches and clings to things really easily, and so we're trying to not have him do that, to try and kind of help him be more well-rounded. Like I gravitated to a lot of stuff when I was a kid, like. Particularly with games and pop culture and things, because my parents got a divorce, and then like there was a variety of other factors kind of in there, but I kind of clung to a lot of that as an escape. And we're trying not to have our kids do the same. Like there were aspects where like a lot of emotional baggage is kids, and so like we're trying to give them more well-rounded. So like we take them a lot of places, we give them a lot of experiences and museums, zoos, all that kind of stuff to try and kind of make them well-rounded. Not to say that I don't expose him to certain video games or certain types of things, but a lot of the stuff that I played way back in the day doesn't even in the slightest entice him because of the animation style. Which will be kind of a topic of another episode, is animation style and kids and adults. It's kind of that realm. And then Brad also says, with the lack of space and money, you know, understanding that, you know, your favorite old games on an emulator. But he still has an NES, SNES, Mega Drive, PS2 set up for gaming. Nothing new game-wise has convinced him to buy a new system. I was done with Battlefield after 2, but that was on PC anyway. I can spend hours on PS2 playing Need for Speed, Hot Pursuit 2, or many other games. And I have a 92 laptop with a heap of DOS-based games on it. They are so fun. Kind of touching on the first part with the gaming, I sold all my game consoles. I have not a one left. I have owned all of those systems except for the NES at one point. I did own a Mega Drive. I did own a SNES, a PlayStation 2. Various forms of Game Boy. I don't want to spend the money on them anymore. And basically, they're glorified PCs, like with an OS that's surrounded around the gaming system. Like I'd much prefer just to play gaming on my PC at this point. There's no enticing matter for me to do that, to get a console every couple of years when I can literally upgrade my PC about every 5 years in minimum specs of anything and spend like $200-$300 and get up to date and keep my same setup essentially. Like I don't have to reformat, I don't have to really change anything. So it's kind of that nature. I just don't upgrade, but it's very entertaining with that. I do love the fact that you have a 1992 laptop to play DOS games. I wish I had, and my brother has like virtual console type thing was built into his machine. Like, he installs these virtual partitions on the PC with the exact specs of our old DOS-based or older computer systems that we used to have as kids. So they play everything. They have, like, Windows 3.1 on them, or 3.11. And so, like, it's kind of funny to see that come out when he plays. But yeah, I for the most part don't really play games too much anymore, and unless it's on PC. And then Battlefield, I'm entertained to see what the new one's going to be. I really don't play all that much anymore. I've played maybe twice in the last year. I'm pretty much a Star Trek Online player at this point. And then really I don't play anything else other than like tabletop board games. Like Ticket to Ride, Settlers of Catan, Seismic, King Domino. And then my wife and I just got this new game called Splendor, which is pretty fun too. And that was kind of like the basis, like why we were trying to do, like, I was trying to do a board game podcast once upon a time, which was kind of dumb. We should have done video, just because you really can't explain much on a podcast, whereas on a video podcast, that would have made more sense. And then it turns out that Nerdist ended up with the same name, or Geek and Sundry took the same name of our podcast. So it was kind of fitting, but we only had one episode, so really can't say much there. But yeah, my friend still plays board games. I still play board games. Unfortunately, he's still, you know, I mean, he lives in Wisconsin. He's got a life. He's happy. He's got a good job. And technically, I could move anywhere I want with working from home. I just choose not to move to a colder state. But yeah, I'm more of a tabletop gamer now, and more of like an occasional gamer on the PC. Like, I really don't try and get too much into gaming anymore, because I have a lot of other stuff going on that I'd like to tackle in my life. Also, back in April, we had the episode of Why Nostalgia is So Profitable, The Good, The Bad, and The Hopeful on series and reboots, revivals and reboots. And Brad kind of mentions, you know, the franchises, like Hollywood having their eyes on max profit, and franchises seem to be, for the most part, the place that more butts go in seats. Reboots, you know, he says, I prefer just to be able to read or, you know, watch the originals, like, get Gargoyles on Netflix so you can watch that. It costs the studios nothing, and, you know, he could see shows like Sequest or Sliders coming back, as they've been talked about for a while, and some of the original cast have been kind of keen on it. I love, and I kind of made this comment on Twitter the other day, that I'm going to try this new experiment where I'm not going to pick up any new television shows. And I'm not sure how well I'm going to do with this, but it's kind of a goal I've been kind of edging towards for some time. Like, I used to watch about 30 shows a week, which was a bit ridiculous, that every time I was on the computer when I wasn't working, or in front of a TV, I was watching a TV show that I, you know, had queued up and DVR'd, and it was, or just streamed them from the websites, and it got to be ridiculous. Like, I just was like, why am I still watching all of these shows? Like, I don't even have life outside of these TV shows. And granted, I can keep track of all the storylines. It didn't bother me. But still, like, and I would even blitz some that were, I knew were done, but I would do it so that I could watch what it had, and then just to see what it turned out to be. Because then it was nothing lost, because I knew it was a limited one season because it got canceled. But, yeah, I mean, I quit watching shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like Once Upon a Time. There were plenty of shows that I was watching, and I just ditched Lethal Weapon just because of the recasting. And they must not have much confidence in it either, because they hacked the episode count from 22 to 13. I liked the dynamic of the actors. I understood why they fired the other guy, you know, but still, I don't really want to see something where they've recast somebody mid, you know, two seasons in, and, oh, we got renewed for a third, but we're going to replace the actor. Like, it would have been one thing if it happened in the first season, because they've had so much time to grow, it would be awkward now at this point, and you'd have to kind of re-get used to everything. So I'm a fan of, and I'm going to continue with watching revivals of TV shows that I got into. Like, for instance, Last Man Standing returning. I'm going to watch the revival when it comes back because it was canceled, and then they're just picking it up where it left off, essentially, which I'm fine with. But I'm not doing reboots, so I wouldn't watch things like, you know, Sabrina, the new Sabrina, or the a variety of other shows that are just being rebooted for the sake of rebooting them. I'm kind of, like, glad that a lot of the shows I watched got canceled. I mean, I feel bad for everybody that was on the shows, but I'm kind of glad in the sense because then I don't feel like there's this baggage of me having to watch them anymore. And a majority of my series have either been canceled or renewed. Most of them have been renewed, but some of them have been canceled. Some of them just had season enders. But I haven't gone back to watch any of those. I'm pretty much watching primarily CW-related shows or like The Orville and Discovery and maybe a couple of animated series. Like, I'll probably pick up like the new Star Wars because it's kind of a revival in a sense, even though it's a new series because it's all one continuity. So I don't really, it's kind of a edgy area to be judging the content. But I'll still be watching majority of my animated stuff, which is the new Star Wars show. And then I'm watching Combiner Wars, the Prime Wars trilogy finale, the Prime Wars, right now on Machinima, which is, again, a continuation. It's not a reboot. Won't be watching the new Cyberverse, more than likely. I get it. I'm to that age where a lot of things are marketing past, you know, my age point to back to the younger age point. And so I get it. And that'll be a point of contact of topics in the near future as well. So moving on to the episode, Why Don't Comic Films Bring People into Shops Anymore? And, you know, essentially we're at the end of the collecting era. It's mostly nostalgia. And those of us that grew up with comics, as Brad has reiterated what I kind of mentioned too, was that comics might go into comic stores, you know, people that grew up with them, but kids really don't. Especially when the stores are, you know, the stories are told basically abridged in film form, and they don't need to actually get the book to read it. And there's, you know, a vast history of good and bad films already made, and physical comics will probably go the way of the CD and just digitize. And I kind of agree with that. Moving on to another topic, we have polarizing and welcoming fandoms in social media and unplugging. This was a little bit back in end of March, and Brad kind of comments, you know, I'd just seen Thor 3 and the trailers, I was angry, and then, you know, saw the first two, and then 3 seemed to be a major shift to follow and fit in with the Guardian films, and it would be like if Ant-Man 3 was directed by Joel Schumacher and was aimed at selling toys. It was enjoyable, and Ragnarok made sense, even though I was thinking, how could this happen to a powerful race? I don't know. I know how I feel about Hulk talking, you know, I don't know how I feel about it, and the issues with focusing on comedy is subjective, and a few of the jokes fell flat, but, you know, watch Justice League, not a fan of the Man of Steel and some of the Batman series, I don't get the love for Wonder Woman, don't care for Darkseid, Steppenwolf, or the Dragonfly Army, but I won't crap on the franchise because I don't understand it or know it. So yeah, I mean, it's... We're coming to this phase in social media, and a lot of the franchises and genres that people are just interested in, and there's a lot of polarization and a lot of infighting of things that should be celebrated. And again, this will be something that gets talked about in that other topic that I'm kind of hinting at. It has to do with Thundercats, and I'll just leave it at that for right now. And then another episode, what's the deal with mobile gaming and transactions? And Jennifer says, trying to get into text-based adventure games, since I always loved those types of books when growing up. I remember a lot of those text-based adventure games, like Hugo. There was one called that. Used to play that. My mom was pretty good at it. It was a DOS-based game, and you kind of, you know, look in the closet, look at this. You know, it was almost like a pre-Sims in a sense, but using text to tell it where to go. Kind of like Myst, where you kind of go over and click on things, and it tells you, you know, yay, nay, things like that. Or Seventh Guest. That was freaky from back in the day. Says, guilty pleasure of hers is that many of your female listeners may know is Mystic Messenger. It's a visual novel dating sims game that does the concept really well. There are a lot of stories and choices you can pick from when you start getting into the crazy soap opera-like plots, with multiple endings from getting the guy or ending up with something very bad happening. Plus, I'm really far into the game without paying a dime. And that can happen. You can play games a lot without paying anything on a lot of these mobile games. But a lot of times, if you want a specific feature or something that's built into the game, or you want to advance yourself faster or get a certain thing, then you have to play the gambling roulette and see if you'll end up with what you want with loot boxes or specifically pay for what it says to get things. She says, I've thought of lots on mobile gaming, but I will try to do them in different posts. She says, I have only done it for Pokemon Go, and it was like $20 to $30 tops. And thinking about random loot boxing games, I wouldn't mind paying a couple of bucks for a full game if I love the demo version, but I won't do it for the random chance in gacha games. I'm shocked when I see huge amounts of money some people may spend on these games. Some examples are from here. Now, I did do this. I'm horrible with it when I have gotten involved with microtransactions, and they do work. They're addicting. I did it in Transformers Earth Wars on mobile game, and I spent, I would say upwards to $150 maybe, to get multiple characters, multiple things, edge my characters along. I don't even play the stupid game anymore. It was such a waste. I played it for a year and a half. I got bored. It essentially, like, it's still installed on my phone. I refuse to remove it because I paid all that money to have this stupid game. It's going to stay on there. But it's a principal reminder to me not to do that again. Now, Star Trek Online and Battlefield 5. Battlefield 5, I bought the expansion to premium. It was like $50. Didn't feel bad about that. I think I bought the game too. I don't recall. I think my dad bought the game, but I think I paid for the expansion of that, which wasn't a big deal. $50 for the entire premium package, early access to everything, and you know, I mean, $100 is terrible anyway for a game, but when you get $50 to get that, it's not bad. So I did that, and then Star Trek Online, I've probably dumped like maybe 200 plus something into that game, and I feel horrible about doing that as well. I was trying to get a stupid ship and opening the loot boxes, and then I realized at some point it was futile for me to go in there and try and win these loot boxes, because majority of the time you're not going to get what you want. 99.9999% of the time you're not getting what you want. There are people that are lucky, their accounts are lucky. Like, I opened like maybe like 50 of those boxes, never got what I wanted. I never got anything other than resources. I started selling the resources, and then I eventually came to this conclusion that if I get Zen or I get dilithium to turn into Zen, I can buy keys. And you can turn around and spend those keys. Now, I've never bought a ship from the Z store. I've bought like the additional costumes. I've bought shuttles. I've bought a specific bridge design because it looks like the Enterprise A, the Constitution refit. I bought an expansion for the bank because they only give you like 10 million that you can hold maximum, which is ridiculous. And you can hold up to 2 billion credits in game if you upgrade it. So I did that, which has helped. But the exchange is a little bit inflated at times, depending on the time of year you're logged in. It's about to go back up again because summer's coming. But I was trying to get a ship, and I figured out it was easier to buy keys or save up and get keys and barter them on the exchange. Although it crashed hard after I did it last year, and it's not regained itself since, so it's really hard to gain credits from selling keys unless you earn the dilithium to trade in. But I spent a lot of money doing that, and then I started bartering the system with the exchange and playing, you know, stock marketing the game, and I ended up getting an amount to get the Kelvin Universe Constitution class. I was trying to get the original Constitution, like a T6, Tier 6 ship, and it failed miserably. And it was like 6 times the cost of getting the Kelvin one, and I was like, you know what, I'll just settle. I'll get the Kelvin, because at least then it's a full Tier 6 ship, and it's at least looks similar. So I settled. But I've not dumped any money in it since, and I've not felt any regret on it. Plus, I don't have any money, so it was kind of beneficial to not do that again. But yeah, I don't know. I've got this like thing now that I try not to dump any money into any of these stores anymore. Going into an episode, another one in April, Radio Memories, Influences in Podcasting. Brad says, I don't think it's fair when listeners want you to listen to their shows also. With the amount of listeners the network has, what percentage have their own projects? There's only so many hours in a day. I don't expect you to listen to any of my shows, and I probably don't listen to any shows the next listener has either. You know, it's kind of difficult. I do really want to listen to shows, and I do really want to help people and kind of critique, and that may be something that we do in the future. As I mentioned in a GCRN update for the new website on the fan page and on our YouTube page, I'm planning some new things with GeekCastRadio.com, where it consists of a possible subscription service. Not using Patreon, just using basic set up for the back end, but also there'll be certain custom things built into the site that we will kind of deliver based on the type of feedback and the type of subscription service. I'm kind of toying with it. I don't know if it's actually going to fully take effect, but it would be nice to kind of cover some of the costs of various aspects. We are looking into app development. We're looking into a variety of other things, but I would like to listen to more podcasts again, honestly, because I feel like sometimes these that I do get stale because I don't have time to listen to a lot of other podcasts. And I do when I go on trips, like when I know I'm going on vacation and I have to drive, I will purposely load up podcasts of things that I've kind of been interested in, but not really had the chance to listen to, knowing full well I'm going to listen to it on the drive there and on the drive back, so that it gives me this outlet to kind of tune in, think about it, and drive at the same time. So I try and do that. But yeah, I mean, I really don't get that many requests from people to listen to their content. I do get people that listen to our content. I do get people that listen to other people on the network's content. But I wouldn't mind possibly like whoring myself out or using myself as a help tool or guide for a variety of podcasts that may come our way. I'm kind of interested in doing that, kind of a consultant role, as it were, where I would listen and kind of give critiques of certain things I've noticed that I've done wrong over the years that may be possible to correct elsewhere. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that. Moving on another episode, I had a kind of, or another comment on Twitter anyway, I had a comment saying I really dislike my AT&T service. The speeds intermittently go down, and then sometimes websites don't load or refresh. I go mobile and no issues. Looking forward to my Comcast install and half the cost. So I essentially set up my Comcast now, and I was paying $40 a month. It was about to go up to $70 for a 30 megabyte download speed or 25 megabyte. And I got a special for Comcast, and I set it for like a 3 week ahead install date. It was free installation, free everything else, and I own my own modem, my own router, which I'm smart in the sense that I keep, when I get a device specifically from like AT&T, I keep the same wireless name and password so that when I reconnect to the next device, all of my devices in my house automatically connect to the connection and or reconnect and don't have an issue. Because I've had this thing in the past where I had to reconfigure all of my devices and it was a royal pain. And I have, you know, two phones, I have a tablet, I have actually two tablets. They're a Kindle Fire and a Kindle Classic. And I have my portable computer out in the living room, I have a laptop, and I have a desktop. And they all have to connect to this one access point. So it was so much easier to just keep them all the same. That being said, I hooked them all up, did an upgrade on my router. It took about 20 minutes for me to do the self-install, call the Comcast on the phone, disconnected AT&T, and I've got Comcast, and so actually everything runs faster and more quickly than it was before because Comcast has like the speed boost technology. It's essentially I pay for the same service, but it's $19.99 a month instead of $40 a month. So that means that when my 1 year is up of that, it'll go up maybe $10, $15. But it's still affordable. I'll be able to get higher speeds more than likely because they'll have a special going on. So it's definitely something I enjoy. But Scanner51 sometimes I wish I had half the problems with AT&T that others have, but I don't. Been with them since 2000. Well, the only one I have is they can't find the wire hub in my house, but then again, neither can I. But yeah, I mean, I don't really have a problem with AT&T per se. I have a problem when the companies screw the customer after they've been in a company for a while and don't really want to work with them. They gave me suggestions. They're like, hey, have you disconnected yet? And I'm like, well, or have you had somebody come install your service? Well, I did the self-install. It's already set up. And the guy on the phone's like, oh, he says, well, you could do the double play. And I'm like, no, I really don't want to do the double play. I already pay cheap enough on my cell phone. I don't want to bundle it because then it goes up. And then you still got to pay for the stupid phones if you want a new device. And we're still using Galaxy S5s because it costs nothing to own them. They may suck by today's standard with camera quality and functionality and signal, but they're still functional, so there's no point in throwing them away. And I don't have $1,000 per person to throw away on two cell phones, to be honest. And I would much rather, if I'm going to blow $1,000, there's many things I could think of to spend that on. One of them would be upgrading my PC, buying my wife a new laptop, and saving some of the money for vacation or something. We just had to replace our stairs in our house because they were caving in, the ones that go up to our upstairs on our tri-level. And that cost us $1,000. So, like, I just don't see the point spending $1,000 on one cell phone as opposed to fixing things that need to be fixed. I've got a leak somewhere in my house, too, and I've got to figure out how bad that's leaking and where it's leaking from and if I fixed it. So there's money better spent elsewhere. I don't feel the need to own the latest and greatest piece of technology. I never have. Like, especially with my PCs, I buy top of the line, but it's like the bottom tier. So it's the cheapest price, but it's like the most forward compatible version, so I can buy whatever I need in the future and massively upgrade, even though it's not up to date. It's still faster. So, like, I have an i3 processor, 12 gigs of RAM, and I have 120 gig SSD hard drive, and I have 500 gig SATA 3. And my PC works fine. I have an NVIDIA video card, and it works great. So, I mean, it's everything works fine with everything I do, so it's not that urgent for me to upgrade. So, but, yeah, that's some of the news, anyhow. And we were featured on Blog Talk Radio with our Power Rangers episode recently. Then kind of rounding it out, I saw somebody asking a question on Twitter of, have you ever bought a record album just for the cover art? And I said, well, no, but I've bought comic books specifically for the cover art because, honestly, I like comic book cover art. I haven't bought any like that in a long time. In fact, I've had to sell most of them, but it's not the same owning the comic as to like downloading a picture. Like, it's not the same thing. Like, I'd prefer just to own it for display purposes, but I don't really have any of that anymore. So, but yeah, I thought it was kind of an interesting thing. So if you guys have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feedback, whatever, topics, you can contact everywhere, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or various other places, at Altered Geek. You can also get a hold of me at SCP21. And until next time, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks.